And you've been listening to Street Beat with Matt Leonard. Thanks, Matt, for being in and doing such a great show. And we, of course, are in our fall membership drive here at the station. And we have 19 renewing members today, 367 total members. We've raised $4,485 today and $72,428 overall towards our goal of $80,000. So thank you ever so much to everyone who's contributed so far, becoming less than, so it's about $7,600 left towards our goal. We have a thank you here for someone who just rang in a little bit ago. And thank you to Sam and Kelly Carlson, who say that they miss Tom. We all do, certainly. And we listen to morning shows for weather and news. And Matt plays a really good show. So there you go. And we look forward to Steve Barry on the radio. Steve is traveling this week, but he did provide us a playlist for the fundraiser. So we will be hearing that in a little bit. Right now, it is time for In the Garden.
Support for this program comes from Bloomsterhus, filled with plants and supplies for the spring, like trees, shrubs, and potting soil. Open on Main Street, 10 to 5, Monday through Saturday, and at 907-772-2566.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a big homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
And today's episode of In the Garden with Daniel Tucker has been recorded. And we're going to go ahead and get into that show right now.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to one more episode of In the Garden. I'm your host, Daniel Rowan Tucker. Leaves are blowing from the trees in the stormy winds of autumn, and I heard there was frost out at Papke's Landing a few nights ago. The seasons are changing. There's no way around it. There's still plenty to do in our gardens around here. It's a good time for mulching beds, transplanting trees and shrubs that have gone dormant, and sowing things like grasses and clover that like to germinate in cool, damp conditions. There's fair weather coming up on the forecast, and I'm looking forward to a few more perfect, crisp fall days. Last week, we dove into the autumn glory of maple trees, and for this episode, as a fall finale to our season on the air, I want to explore the wider palette of leaves changing color as trees and shrubs get ready for winter. It can be the most dramatic show that our gardens and landscapes give us. With the days growing shorter, many plants enter a period of dormancy and stop photosynthesizing in their leaves. With green chlorophyll no longer present in the leaves, other pigments that were there all along suddenly reveal their colors, along with new hues resulting from the transformation of sugars and other compounds. Weather and pathogens can also affect the autumn display, and blotchy leaf blights and other fungal ailments can add more brown and black to the palette of warm yellows or oranges and reds. Those who've lived in New England or other regions with an abundance of fall colors always yearn for that special harvest time bonanza of fiery hues covering hills and valleys as far as the eye can see. I think our neck of the woods here will always be dominated by the somber greens of our spruces, hemlocks, and cedars, but I also think that we have room for a few more deciduous trees that can brighten up our gray fall months with their exuberant displays. With the superlatively wet spring we experienced this year, many of our apple, crabapple, and mountain ash trees were largely defoliated with some kind of leaf blight, and I noticed a number of cottonwoods that already shed their leaves in the late summer, perhaps also related to some kind of leaf affliction connected with the wet spring. Bummer. But there are autumn colors out there nonetheless. Even the lowly Devil's Club adds luster to the forest shadows when its giant leaves turn yellow. Here's a list of other trees and shrubs you should seek out for their fall colors. We covered the glorious maples last week, but there are many, many more plants out there waiting to grab your attention. The Katsura tree, botanically known as Cercetiphyllum japonicum, the Katsura is a special tree. It's descended from an ancient lineage with a long fossil record, and yet it has no close living relations other than one other species in the genus. In Japan, the Katsura becomes a large forest tree, and its wood is valued for a variety of uses like cabinetry and game boards for playing the traditional board game Go. When the leaves turn color in the fall, they can sometimes emit a lovely sweet aroma that gives the tree its other common names of caramel tree, candy floss tree, or Kuchenbaum in German, meaning cake tree. Now, I've never smelled this aroma myself here in Petersburg, so I'm very curious. Maybe it's something that's only happens in warmer places, but it's pretty widely reported, as you can tell from all the different names of this tree. So I would love to hear feedback from folks who have Katsura trees around, because there are quite a few of them around town now. Luckily for us, the Katsura seems to be quite happy in Petersburg, probably growing significantly more slowly here than it would in the long, hot summers of its native Japan or down in the lower 48, but nonetheless, it makes an elegant small tree here with a rounded crown. Its small, coin-shaped leaves hang down in delicate tresses, even more so in the weeping cultivar of Katsura, one of which can be seen in a front yard on North Nordic Drive, just east of the Eagle's Roost Park. In the fall, as we now see, the leaves turn a wide spectrum of yellow, orange, pink, brown, and reddish, and they say that when the leaves turn brown, they're at their most fragrant. There are several really fine Katsura specimens out in front of our wonderful public library. So go give those trees a sniff and tell me if you can smell the caramel. Birch trees. We covered the birches in a previous episode. They can be a very elegant and subtle addition to our autumn display. Usually, kind of a golden yellow, lemon yellow, there might be a few that reach into the more orangish range of the spectrum, but it's mostly kind of a golden yellow. But given the kind of small size and delicate texture of the foliage, especially with Betula pendula, the classic silver birch of Europe and Norway, you know, it's more than just the color. It's just the overall texture of the tree. When it gets a really good fall show, it's quite something to see. I'm going to be keeping my eye on that big old, Betula pendula that's right behind Alaska Fiber at the old Reed place. You can see it driving by from the road if you look back there. I'm be really curious to see how that colors this fall, if it gives us some good golden colors. Tilia, or the linden tree. Now, I haven't seen any lindens around Petersburg, and that's too bad. Linden trees seem to do pretty well here. There's a bunch of them around Juneau. They've been pretty widely planted there as street trees, and their fall color isn't super spectacular, but it's generally a nice kind of clear lemon yellow. Definitely worth having around, and they're just a great kind of all-around street tree. They make a solid round-headed tree. They've got these big sort of rounded leaves with a point at the end. We don't have many honeybees around, but the linden is famous for being a great tree for honeybees, produces tons of nectar, and part of the reason that they're not as widespread as they once were in the nursery trade is that they've gotten a bad rap among some for their habit of attracting aphids that drip sticky honeydew on anything below them, like sidewalks and cars. Many car owners who prize the fastidious appearance of their automobile have become enemies, sad to say, of the linden tree for its tendency to attract aphids and leave sticky honeydew on things underneath it. But at any rate, I don't think that should keep us from propagating more linden trees around here. Euonymus, or burning bush, is a shrub that many of you may be familiar with. There's quite a few around town. It's a staple in the landscape trade these days, and one of its most attractive features is that it can put on a really stunning autumn display. I mean, it's a shrub, it's not a tree, but what it lacks in size, it makes up for in megawatts of color. It's just this bright blood red crimson display when leaves turn in the autumn. So really great as like a focal point in the home landscape, in the garden. One caveat, the deer love these things to death. So if you want to grow a euonymus burning bush shrub, you're going to need some deer fencing or some other kind of strong deer deterrent strategy, because the deer will chow down on these guys if you let them. Our native willows and cottonwoods and also ornamental willows that are around town, they're kind of a mixed bag for fall color. I think it might be one of those cases where excess nitrogen in the landscape or just a heavy diet of nitrogen. The willows love it. They drink it up. They're heavy feeders. They grow super fast with a lot of nitrogen, but I suspect that it maybe hinders the fall color. It may also just be the variation of the different species, but I've seen some decent color on a number of the native willows. The schooler willow, which is a sort of nondescript shrubby, large shrub to small tree that pops up all over the place, in disturbed develop areas, the ballpark, Severson's neighborhood, out the road, you know, any kind of gravelly roadside where you'd see alders growing. A lot of people probably don't distinguish them from alders, but they are different, and they do have some nice golden color in their leaves sometimes, like right now. Some of the other willows, not so much, more kind of brown, green. The leaves might just drop off green in some cases. The cottonwoods can have really lovely fall color, but it seems like in certain places they get afflicted with some kind of splotchy black spots on the leaves, and then the leaves all turn brown and fall off in late summer. I noticed that on several trees around town. But out the road at Papke's Landing, right before you get to the turnoff to Papke's, there's a couple of cottonwoods right there on the right-hand side of the road, just above the Falls Creek turnoff, that have some lovely fall color, beautiful golden hues, and still a little bit green at the top of the tree. And so depending on where they are, maybe soil conditions and also the seasonal weather variations of the year, cottonwoods can put on a really beautiful golden display of foliage. And of course their close kindred, the aspen tree, much more at home in the climates of the interior, but maybe possible to grow here. I saw a couple little aspen trees in Juneau. You know, the aspens are world renowned for their fall display, those golden coins of leaves that fall. Really beautiful. So definitely worth a try for more from the cottonwoods and maybe the aspens. You know, and the cottonwoods grow so fast and they're so easy to grow, that, you know, if you had a big swath of disturbed soil somewhere without too many buildings nearby and you just wanted to make a fast growing display of beautiful colors, I would plant some cottonwoods. Back to shrubs, berberis, the barberry. We've got a number of berberis shrubs around town. The genus is quite large. There's a wide selection of barberries, and many of them have beautiful crimson foliage in the fall, at least for the deciduous ones, that is, much like our native blueberries, huckleberries, some of our other vacciniums in the heather family have some really lovely colors in the fall. And if you let your eye wander out across the mountain slopes and the alpine meadows, there's some really rich colors out there in the fall. And, you know, the blueberries popping up at the edge of the forest and the driveways can have some wonderful deep crimson to purple shades, and really a feast for the eyes if you stop and take the time to notice them. The kiwi vine, hardy kiwi, Actinidia colomicta, I believe, is the scientific name, can have some beautiful fall color too, bright yellow. I saw some growing on a fence just near the hospital the other day. Really lovely fall colors there. And the same with our some of our other shrubs like currants and roses. The Rosa rugosa can have a wonderful range of golden, scarlet, purple, green, all on the same plant. Really beautiful display sometimes. Cherries. I couldn't leave out the cherry trees. Many cherries are not very at home in our climate, but for the ones that are, they can put on a great fall display. There's one really healthy-looking cherry tree, at least one, out by the Forest Service building out in Scow Bay, right next to the parking lot. There's kind of a youngish cherry tree, totally covered with fiery golden to orange to crimson leaves right now. Real poster child for the fall color potential of the cherries. So, among the hardier cherries, and, you know, a lot of our cherries are grafted on, a seedling rootstock of Prunus avium, which is, you know, related to our dessert cherries, but it's just kind of a wild, you know, or it's the sort of the generic, land race, you might say. But those Prunus avium, could be worth propagating more of, seeking out more of just for their fall color alone. Where I used to live on San Juan Island, we had a ton of wild, Prunus avium, and, the fall displays they had were just, stunning some years. You know, you'd get what I call the royal flush, the yellow, golden, orange, scarlet, green and purple all on the same tree at the same time. Really, really amazing to see. Honeysuckles, we've got a variety of honeysuckles around. They can give us some fall colors, and the climbing hydrangea, beautiful, climbing vine, that has lovely peeling bark and also some good yellow color in the fall. Vines are really great because you can, with some intelligent trellising, you can really mold them and fit them to almost any different space alongside the walls of buildings, in between buildings. The vines are really the architect's friend, I would say, in beautifying our structures. The larch tree. Larches deserve more attention from us. They're a conifer that looks much like a spruce or a pine in its overall form, but with deciduous needles that are bright grass green all summer long, and then they turn a rich yellow or even orangish in the autumn as they fall from the branches and leave the tree bare all winter. They do really great here. There's several species. Western larch is a good one to try, probably available from native plant nurseries down in the Pacific Northwest. Also, one that's native up north in Alaska, Larix laricina, also known as the tamarack, which its native range stretches from all the way from Alaska to, you know, New Brunswick or Newfoundland, you know, all the way to the eastern seaboard. And is known to be quite tolerant of wet soil, grows in sphagnum bogs. So I think that's a shoe-in for Petersburg. I saw a really beautiful specimen of Larix laricina by the post office up in Hoonah. Very tall, narrow, spire-like tree. I don't know if that was a selection cultivar or not. Maybe just its natural form, grows in cold, snowy northern places, needs that spire-like form to shed all the snow. But I could tell by its cones it was a Larix laricina. So that one's high on my list. And then, yeah, the yellow color in the fall. I mean, fall color on a conifer. What could be cooler than that? We do have a very fine young specimen of larch. I don't know what species it is. It hasn't started bearing any cones yet. So it's hard to tell. But we have a very fine young larch right by the main entrance to the public library. And, there's a few others scattered around town too. So, keep the larches in mind. The dawn redwood, not quite as at home here as the larch. It's more a lover of warm, hot, humid summer climates, but it's another deciduous conifer, and its fall colors are more on the kind of rusty orangish brown, kind of bright ochre, brownish orange, end of the spectrum, and, really, really beautiful. There's one out by Hungry Point, in somebody's yard that's kind of a little stunted and windswept looking, but healthy enough. And, yeah, interesting story with the dawn redwoods. There's an old newspaper, clipping from back in the 1950s when that species had just been, discovered as a sort of living fossil growing in a super remote valley in China. Seeds were being distributed worldwide. And, I believe a few came to Petersburg according to, that story. A few seeds or maybe seedlings of the dawn redwood were sent here, in connection with the Forest Service, I believe. And so I'm very curious if that one at Hungry Point maybe is connected, could have been planted back then. But anyways, dawn redwood, just a special tree, living fossil. And last of all, I want to hit you with, one of my far out experimental trees. Have no idea if there's one growing anywhere in Petersburg or even Southeast Alaska, but it's high on my list for propagation. Nothofagus and Antarctica, the southern beach, or the Antarctic beach more properly. Nothofagus is a whole genus, of southern beaches related to the beeches and oaks and chestnuts of the northern hemisphere, but long lost, cut off way down there in, Gondwana land and Antarctica, grew all over the, now lost, rainforests of Antarctica. And now the Nothofagus, are mainly found in Patagonia and New Zealand. But Nothofagus Antarctica, known in Chile also as the Inir tree. I'm not, probably not pronouncing that right, but, it's one of the southernmost growing trees in the world. Very small, delicate foliage, often contorted, windswept form, kind of a shrubby small tree in the wild, grows on super rocky, windswept mountainsides way down there in Tierra del Fuego, Patagonia, but, can have really beautiful, fiery, crimson fall colors. And, you know, you can look up amazing photographs of Patagonia and southern Chile in the fall and some of these Nothofagus forests. There's a few other species as well that have good fall colors, but Nothofagus Antarctica I would start with just because it's the most hardy and the most adapted to those frigid near Antarctic climates that are probably approximate to our Alaskan climate. So yeah, that's just a pet favorite of mine that's on my wish list. And that's all for this season's last episode of In the Garden. Thank you so much for joining me. I want to share my gratitude to the fine folks here at KFSK for giving this platform to spread the joy of gardening. They're working hard to keep our locally owned radio station alive and well. It's hard to say what next year holds for me, but I can honestly say that I would be delighted to carry on this show if it fits in with everything else. Until next time, remember, the best fertilizer is the gardener's footstep. So, spend plenty of time in your garden, folks. Thank you.
Support for this program comes from Bloomsterhouse, hosting work from over 40 local artists, locally grown flowers, and Scandinavian-inspired gifts. Bloomsterhus, on Main Street, Facebook, and at 907-772-2566.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe and don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bacon. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
And I want to thank Daniel Tucker for a great season of In the Garden. And as he noted, that is the final episode of the season. I also want to thank Craig Olson and Deb Hurley, who got the season started off back in April. And we appreciate them and them passing the torch to Dan. Very cool.